My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. And tonight, it's good to be here at the Chabad. And as I said, this is step 11. And then next week, God willing, we'll go on to step 12. And then I'm off to the West Miami group. And you're all welcome to come on down there and join us down there. It's a wonderful group. It's one of the oldest groups in Miami. But it's been a real pleasure coming up here. I really enjoyed it. I got to drive up here with a bunch of guys. It's like an hour drive from Miami, but you know, we're with good friends, and you know, it's sort of like a nice deal, and we have dinner beforehand. So I really appreciate the hospitality and everybody being here. And I'm going to try to touch a little bit about my experience with Step 11 and some of my opinions about it and how it's worked in my life. And I'm not going to be able to give an... There's no way I can give an exhaustive, comprehensive deal on step 11. There's a lot of ways of approaching it. There's two particular areas that I sort of want to discuss tonight, and I'll probably get through at least one, and maybe I'll touch upon the other, which has to do with something called inspirational thinking, which is part of step 11, and I've approached it many different ways, and I just want to just sort of talk about what's on my heart. I'm gonna pull a little something I did with Stevie B about 10 years ago. How many people know Stevie B? You know, I've sponsored Stevie for a while, and he tells a story, you know, that he came in off of a run. I'm using it as an example. It was an interesting example. He came in off of a run, and he was sitting at a meeting, you know, with his brain still clogged with crack and booze and whatever the heck it is was going on with him. And this is sort of like his testimony, actually. He was at a particular meeting, and he was at this meeting with his father. And I was doing the meeting, and I don't know how many people have heard this story. You've heard it, apparently, and I started reading from the Bible. And he turned to his father, and he said something like, "You can't do that in AA," or whatever the heck he said. Because we all know if you do something like that or talk about anything having to do with God in AA, you know that the smart money will tell you that everybody who's new in the program will dissolve. You know that's true. But apparently Stevie B didn't dissolve, you know, and it seemed to work for him. So that may not be true. It may not be true that if you talk about God to a newcomer, he may not dissolve. As a matter of fact, there's a possibility that if he really wants this thing with all his might, and he wants what you have, and he'll do anything not to drink, he might follow you and start taking this thing seriously. Which is probably why they have all that stuff in there, like burn the idea into the newcomer's mind that he can get well no matter anything, as long as he trusts in God. That's why those fools probably put that in there. Job or no job, you know, you can stay sober as long as you have a relationship. It all depends upon your relationship with God. So, but somewhere along the line, you know, it's like that game of telephone. You know, that game of telephone where you say one thing at one end, and then at the other end, after 20 people, you say... The grass is green, and by the time it gets to the 20th person, the grass is yellow, or the penguin is green. Well, somewhere along the line, A started off as a bunch of guys for a period of 4 years reading intensely the Bible, because they didn't have the big book. And then basically, after reading the Bible for 4 years, coming up with their own book, which is basically almost the Bible commentary, which they say in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers was based specifically on the most important books that they like to read, which is 1 Corinthians 13, the book of James, we were almost called the James Club, and Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew 5, 6, and 7. You know, how to live the Christian life, what it's all about. And this is all in our literature, by the way. And then up to 1952 at least, still continuing to read the Bible and doing all that, and then somehow, because of like whatever it is, like telephone, the game of telephone, we went from that deal, okay, a book where they say that the whole thing is based upon God, burn the idea into the newcomer's mind, job or no job, talk about God, that's the archway of freedom. Somehow we got to the point in the year 2011 where if you talk about God, you're going to scare away and hurt the newcomer. So apparently it went from you focus on God, there's only one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now, to don't talk about God. Now, of course, the program actually didn't change. This is something that happened
over a period of years. And you will have to read the big book. And you will have to read the 12 and 12 and all the literature. And you're going to have to watch who stays here and who doesn't stay here. Who stays sober and who doesn't stay sober. And you're going to have to watch of the people who do stay sober, the kind of sobriety they have, the kind of not only physical sobriety, but emotional sobriety and spiritual sobriety they have. You're going to have to determine what you want and what you don't want as adults. And that you're going to have to make your own decision about the God deal. You're going to make your own decision. Nobody's going to shove it down your throat. And you're going to decide somewhere down the line whether you're 5 years sober or 10 years sober or 15 years sober or 30 years sober. You're going to decide how important that deal is and what's the right or wrong of it in your life and what you're going to talk about when you tell your story. You're going to have to decide that for yourselves. But I can tell you this, how your life is going and how you feel about yourself and how strongly you've commit yourself to that deal is going to have a lot to determine that as to how your life is going. You know, just bank on it. It's not going to have to do with, you know, bad breaks and misunderstandings or, you know, if you're lucky and you win the lottery or a matter of fate. It's going to depend upon your answer to that question, your relationship to God and your life, and how important that deal is. How important that deal is. It's going to depend upon that, in my opinion, based upon, and I'm not talking about a guy who came in here who was raised, you know, in religion or anything. I was a Jewish kid from New York. The only thing I worshipped was Playboy magazine, you know what I mean? And believe me, if you had given me the option of which way to go, I certainly would have gone the way of either the atheists or the people that thought God was not important. And but you know something in my desire to not only stay physically sober, but to get what I saw other people had, I wound up here, where I'm at with this understanding. Now, the other thing I want to point out is, this is my own personal opinion. This is my story. I mean, tell your own story. This is the story I'm telling, you know, and it says that what I'm supposed to do is I'm supposed to talk about this deal. And I'm so glad, you know, that I spoke about the topic last week on the 10th step, because it's a great lead into this, the no juggling thing about God and the continuation thing, because it's really a good lead-in for this. So what I'm going to talk about is my opinion, based upon my sobriety, and, you know, I've been sober a little over 30 years now, and what I've seen happening here with other people and what's happening with me. You don't have to get mad about it. You don't have to get upset about it. If you don't agree, just don't agree with me. Just don't do it. Don't even worry about it, okay? I'm not here to say things that I think will make you feel good. And I'm not here to say things that are going to make you feel bad. I'm just here to tell you the way I see it based upon my sobriety. You can take it or leave it. It's just an AA meeting. Nobody's going to force you to take a test or anything like that. You can walk out of here and you can follow and do whatever you want to do. I'm just giving out information. You know, if it helps you, it helps you. One day I was at a meeting and I was just giving information out and I was doing stuff. You know, it says God will show. We know but a little. I mean, I'm hoping some of you actually read the big book. If you do, it says, God, we know but a little. God will constantly disclose to you. God is constantly disclosed to me. One day, I was reading from the Bible in a big book meeting, you know, in an AA meeting. And apparently, it was something that Stevie B had to hear. So it'll work for him. But there's nothing I try to do in AA, no matter what the literature is I'm using or what I draw upon, which isn't relevant to the topic, which isn't, I don't believe, relative to the relevant to the topic. You know, it says in the big book, and I'm sure with this group, and I know you guys have been around here for a while, I don't have to sit here and stress the importance of God and a relationship with God. On page 28, it says, we in turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that works. We think it says right here, it says, if what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship. We think it no concern. Now, how about this one? I'm going to talk about this in a little while when I start talking about my own experience. We think it no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify themselves with as individuals. You know, it says it's true. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, or religion. That's absolutely true. But let me suggest something to you. After you read this book and you understand what's going on here with the individuals within our organization,
You can have Jewish people, Muslim people, Christian people, whatever you want to be. I'm going to suggest to you that even though AA is not allied, and it is not allied, I'm going to suggest to you that one of the goals of being in here and after reading and meditating and praying and improving your consciousness is that you ought to get allied. You don't want to be any loose cannon floating out there on the planet Venus not being allied. You know, that's what alcoholics are. We're not allied. We're loose. We're out there in the bars trying to get allied. And you know what? We're trying to get allied. He's trying to get allied with her, and you're trying to get allied with him. And with, you know, with that, you know, we're trying to get allied. This is trying to ally us with the only thing and the only people that are going to keep us sober, you know, spiritually and emotionally. People who are believers. You know, people, that's why they say we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. I mean, the truth is, Alcoholics Anonymous in the Big Book and another material takes a stand on this. We encourage church membership. You may not believe that, but it's in the book. You wouldn't know it to listen to the fellowship, but don't listen to the fellowship because the fellowship is made up of alcoholics. Don't listen to the fellowship. This ain't, listen to me. I'm not putting you guys down. I'm part of the fellowship. Trust me. If you've been to a bunch of meetings and you know what I'm talking about is true, this is not Well People's Anonymous. Don't believe everything you hear at the meetings. When the angry old fart gets up and says, this ain't a religion, don't believe him. You know, I mean, don't believe that stuff, okay? Read the book. Read the literature. There's a lot of stuff said here. We think of no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify. Listen, Bill Wilson was religious. Bob Smith was religious. Most of the first aides were religious. They belonged to religion. Bill Wilson basically gave credit for all the 12. He gave credit to Sam Shoemaker. You know, one of his sponsors, his spiritual sponsors, was Ed Dowling, a Jesuit priest. I mean, religion is all. He's Ebbie Thatcher. He says when Ebbie came to him, he gave him a simple religious idea. He uses the word. They don't put down religion. We think of no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify themselves with as individuals. This should be an entirely personal affair which each one decides for himself in the light of past associations or his present choice. Not all of us join religious bodies. Now listen to this. Here's the next part. But most of us favor such memberships. If you came into AA at that time and you allied yourself with one of these old timers that you think, I want to be like these guys, there weren't too many old timers back then, you would probably be aligning yourself with a guy who was going to church and wasn't putting it down. You didn't have a lot of meetings, people in AA putting down religion or any of that. It wasn't part of the AA lingo. I mean, now it is because we're cool. Then it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Now, the reason I talk about religion, and that's going to be part of this deal, is because I want to tell you something personally what happened in my life. I never joined AA to become part of a religion. You know, and you know something, for some people, what will happen is you'll hear it in here, they'll tell you, don't worry, you don't have to join, it's not a religion, and it's entirely possible that that might have sort of scared me a little, if I was forced to do that, okay? But the fact of the matter is, this conception that it's like a bad thing, or it's a horrible thing, or there's something wrong with it, runs counter to what AA is all about. And it happens to play into my testimony and my story, so I'm going to talk about it. It says, further on, clear-cut directions are given, shown how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual, in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view, the way he established his relationship with God. So what I'm supposed to do here is, it's not a drunkalogue. I'm supposed to talk about how I established and maintained and improved my relationship with God, especially when I'm talking about the 11th step. If I'm not going to talk about that, why have nobody just talking about the 11th step? Because that's what the 11th step is about. Now, you know, I was looking at the step 11 and the 12 and 12. And I just want to read the last paragraph of step 11 and 12 and 12 because it sort of feeds into a little bit of what I'm about here. It says, the last paragraph says this. Perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation and prayer is the sense of belonging that comes to us. We no longer live in a completely hostile world. We are no longer lost and frightened and purposeless. The moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as the real and eternal things of life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by all the seeming evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. You know, those worldly clamors? You know, the things that bother you. Listen, let me tell you something. Here's what I think. I think if you're ever disturbed within the next week, 10 days, or year about anything, I don't think it's going to have anything to do with God. You can bitch and moan about God all you want. But I think if you ever become a thumb-sucking crybaby, or you're whining to anybody, or you're not feeling good, or you're depressed, I don't think you're going to be depressed about God. I don't think you're going to be scared of God. I don't think you're going to have a problem with God. I think it's going to be about your car. I think it's going to be about your girlfriend or your boyfriend. I think it's going to be about your work or money. I think it's going to be about all the things of the world. So one of the things you're going to have to learn in here is where the real enemy lies. And God is not your enemy. God is your friend. God is the only salvation. Let me tell you something. Your car will rust. You'll lose your job. Your health will go. That gal's gone. You know, there is nothing that, Social Security, we don't even know whether it's going to be around. The United States, who knows? Probably gone in 50 years. The presidents, senators, whatever, nothing is stable. One thing, only one thing. And it's the only thing that's involved, it's the only thing that's designed to save you. It says there is one that has all power. It's the only thing, and that's the only thing in AA, if you listen carefully, that they're like putting down, that they don't want you to look at. They want you to look at that stuff that's driving you crazy and driving you back to drink and scaring the crap out of you. You know, and let me tell you what this book says. This isn't me. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the 12 and 12. This is what it says. It says this. This is the last paragraph. The moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as the real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed. We are no longer deeply disturbed. Remember what my sponsor used to say to me? Some of you have heard my steps before. When I'd whine and cry about something, he'd say, you know why you're disturbed? And I'd say, yeah, I just told you why I'm disturbed. He says, that's not why you're disturbed. And I'd say, why am I disturbed? He says, because you're disturbable. Because you're disturbable. It says, God, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as the real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by all the seeming evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. Listen, you want to delve into, you know, dive into, wallow in, spend your whole time, whole life focusing on purely human affairs, have at it. And you let me know 10 years from now how it goes, how it's working out for you. I have a feeling you'll be anxious. Here's the last two lines. Here's the last two lines. Listen to the last two lines of 12 and 12. We know when you're focusing on him, when you're improving that relationship, it says this. We know that God lovingly watches over us. We know that when we turn to him, all will be well with us here and hereafter. We know that when we turn to him, all will be well with us here and hereafter. Let me ask you something. What would you pay? What would your life be like if you always knew, not thought or had an opinion, but knew that it would always be well for you here and hereafter? I mean, how much whining would you do? How much complaining would you do? How much sleep would you lose? You know, what would you be doing with your life? Do you think your life would be a little bit differently? If you knew that no matter what was going on, it was going to be well with you here and hereafter. You know what it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Does it say that in the 12 and 12? It says this. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided here and after this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. This is the arch of freedom. The arch of freedom is the understanding who God is, who we are, our relationship, and that he watches over us. When we sincerely took such a position, you know what that means? Listen to me. That means when you sincerely take that position. It doesn't happen, now listen, until you sincerely take that position. You understand? You see, if you have a problem with that and it's not working out for you, it's because, you ready? Because you haven't sincerely taken that position. You haven't sincerely taken that position. But those of us who have sincerely taken that position experience this. When we sincerely take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Kept close to him and performed his work well, which I think is different than doing whatever the heck you wanted to do. But of course, in order to get close to him and perform his work well, you'd have to actually get close to him and then figure out what his work is. Established on such a footing, that footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. Here it goes again. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or hereafter. We were reborn. Fear of hereafter. He will be with us always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could last abandon ourselves utterly to him. And then later on, it says in the book, in talking about the same subject, because it's really the same subject all the way through the book. All the way through the book, it's the same subject. It says, still you may say, but I will not have benefit of contact with you who wrote this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember, your real reliance is always upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you need. He's going to show you who to hang around. He's going to show you who not to hang around. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose to you. That's the inspirational thinking. God will constantly disclose to you more to you and to us. He's going to constantly disclose this stuff to you if you sincerely make that decision. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but you obviously cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it, now listen to me, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. See to it that that relationship is right. This is what we talked about last week. You know, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. This is the great fact. This is the great fact of this entire book. This is the last thing. This is the great fact. How can you do this program and experience the miracles of this program and sit around saying, we're not going to talk about God, or that's, how can you deal with this stuff with that attitude? Abandon yourself again. Abandon, which is more than just dabble. It's more than just once on Tuesdays, maybe on Wednesdays. It's more than, you know, church for an hour. It says, abandon yourself to God. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Let me ask something. When you hear somebody say, abandon yourself to God, what does that mean to you? Does that mean abandon yourself to God unless there's like a football game on? Abandon yourself to God unless, you know, you've got a girlfriend, you want to please her? What does abandon yourself? Sort of like means it's like the number one, it's the most important thing. Make it the most important thing in your life. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely if you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. Hey, you want to be in the fellowship of the Spirit? Hey, listen, it's nice to be in AA. You know, but if you really want to be in the fellowship of the Spirit, this is the stuff that you got to be involved in. This is what they're talking about, the fellowship of the Spirit, which comes from what? You know, it's capitalized. Fellowship of the Spirit is capitalized. You know where that comes from? Well, the only way you'd know where that came from is if you read the Apostle Paul's letters in the Bible, because he speaks about belonging to the fellowship of the Spirit. The only way you'd understand where all this stuff came from, you see, if you weren't familiar with the Bible and the underpinnings of this thing, you would think that this came out of Bill Wilson's head. He just thought this stuff up. You know what I mean? And that's all you want. But you see, if you were open-minded, which has to do, by the way, with the second step, if you read the stuff and you lost all your prejudice and you actually read the Bible, you'd understand that this whole thing is a Bible commentary. And then you get pissed off and say, well, I'm not going to read it anymore. And you go out and drink and die and do whatever that deal is, you know, instead of putting it down. But if you were interested in improving your conscious contact with God and knowing more and getting to know him better, you might even pick up one of them books and read it, which is what I did, you know. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And, you know, if I'm going to talk about my experience, I got to talk about that deal because this is my experience. And I am really not worried or concerned at all. You know, this is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. You watch other people. How do we learn it in here? We watch other people. We decide who we're going to pick as our sponsor. We decide who we're going to follow. It doesn't bother me at all if I tell you I'm a Christian and I go to church and I go to Bible studies. It doesn't bother me at all. That's my job. It's not my job to impose my religion or my spirituality on anybody. It's only, but I'll tell you one thing, it is my job to expose myself. I'm not scared or worried. I do not feel ashamed or worried about that deal. Because you know why? Because this book tells me. It says I talk about relationship with God. This book tells me, it says we never apologize for God or how he's, we never apologize for God. How would you know what the deal is? This book tells, and you want to know something? If some guy wants to come up here and say, well, I worship the great moose, you know what I mean, at work, and it's working out, and you want to worship the big great moose, and it's working out, and you then go at it. We're all adults. You pick and choose what you want to do. But I'm not going to hide what happened to me when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was given the 24-hour book. And I don't know how many people use the 24-hour book. I guess it's still used, but I mean, I know it's been supplanted by other more secular sort of books. And the 24-hour book was written with most of the people that sponsored me or who were involved for 20, 30 years in AA when I came in were reading the 24-hour book. And the 24-hour book was a combination of basically sayings from the big book, the Holy Bible, and basically that was it, mashed in. It had like meditation of the day, word of the day, and prayer of the day. And I read that for 15 years every day because my sponsor told me to, you know, get on my knees every day and ask God's help to stay sober and read this book. And then I read this book. I read the Bible. I went through a lot of stuff trying, you know, a lot of this stuff has to do with on-the-job training, as we talked last week. I mean, it's not just intellectually knowing this stuff. It's how do you apply this stuff and stay sober for good purpose and not blow your brains out while the checks are bouncing. I mean, unfortunately or fortunately, the way this thing works is they don't stop the world. They don't say, Russell's sober. Stop sending him those damn FP&L bills. Russell's sober. You get a pass on all utilities until you got 20 years. No. Russell's sober. No traffic jams. Everybody stay home for a half an hour while he's trying to get to work. No. This is like, listen, you know what this is like? Anybody ever see Saving Private Ryan? You know the beach scene where the guys are hitting the beach? And they're being fired on by the machine guns. This is like working the 12 steps while that is like happening to you. You're ducking behind things. Guys are being blown up next to you. And you're working. And let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you something. You get off the beach, you got like a year. When you get off the beach, you got like a year. You know? I mean, that's what this is like. This is how you learn this stuff. You learn what works. You learn what doesn't work. This is how we learn. We get slapped down. We get hurt. And after 5,000 times that happens, we say, I just ain't going to do that anymore. I think I will listen to my sponsor. You know what I mean? And we do that. And over a period of time, we learn this stuff. And the great thing is, we don't learn this stuff intellectually. We learn this stuff experientially. And the only way to learn this stuff is experientially, because then you take it serious. You know it works. Because in your life, if you do this stuff over and over again and you get incredible results, you can never be swayed by some banana in a meeting telling you that God doesn't work when you've done it 50 times and you've got the peace and serenity that comes from that deal. Nobody can talk you out of your experience. So when you've been focusing on God and you've been improving your relationship with God and you've been doing this stuff and your life is like unbelievably incredible, no matter what happens, nobody's going to tell you, hey, it doesn't work. You can say, hey, it works for me. Nobody's going to talk you out of it because it becomes part of your experience. So you got to do it while you're experiencing life. So part of the deal, and you know how God works. You know, we talk about these God incidents. The way God works is he just sends these Eskimos, like Bob Earl says, these Eskimos in to tap you on the shoulder. And sort of, you meet these people out of nowhere. And they give you a suggestion. And you know, as you're walking along the road, you know, so you meet somebody and all of a sudden they tap you on the shoulder and they point you over there and you make a 2-degree, you know, you turn 2 degrees to the right and you keep walking and you bump into another guy and you bump into another, and next thing you know, you're over here. You may never see this guy who you bumped into.
And one day some guy tapped me on the shoulder, and I had like about 11, 12, 13 years sober, 15 years sober, whatever that guy had. And he says this to me, "You ever been to a Bible study?" That's exactly what happened. He said, "You ever been to a Bible?" I didn't meet him in AA. Wasn't an AA guy. And I said, "Well, no, I'm thinking I'm Jewish, you know? For some reason, I didn't think Jews read the Bible. I don't know, maybe they don't. I don't know, you know? Well, that's because I'm Jewish and I never read the Bible, you know? Well, you know, my Bible was in Hebrew and I couldn't really read Hebrew, but..." And I said, "No, you know?" And he says, "Well, do you want to go to this Bible study with me?" And, you know, that's kind of funny. You know, you love going to A meetings, but I'll be damned if I'll be caught in a Bible study. You know, I mean, that's embarrassing, you know. And, whoa, that's weird. You know, and so I was started to say no because I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, if you're an alcoholic and somebody says anything new to you, the first thing you say is no, you know. If you're a drinking alcoholic, the first thing you say is yeah. You know, yes, you try it. "Hey, you ever snort this green, messy, cruddy stuff? Oh, no, let me try some of that stuff, you know." But as soon as you get sober, you say no to everything because, you know why you say no to everything? Because you're so open-minded, you know, so, because you're practicing whatever that step is we practice. So in any event, you know, some things that go through an alcoholic's mind, we're so riddled with fear. I'm worried about what my Aunt Joan would think about me, who's been dead 5 years. Worried about this guy would talk. What do they say in AA? What if somebody from AA, you know, it's like funny. You know, when you go into AA, you say, "Well, what if I meet somebody in AA that knows me?" Well, I'm saying, "Well, what if I go to the Bible study and there's somebody from AA there and they see I'm there, you know? They may take it back to the group and say, 'Russell's getting well. He left our group. He went, you know.' What if that old guy who's against religion sees me, you know? God forbid. I mean, here I am. That's the same old disease of the people-pleasing, you know, disease of the, you know, why don't people like me? What did I say? You know, focusing on, you know, what people are thinking about me, as if people are thinking about me or even care about me. And that's the thing that got me to charge up my credit cards, you know, buying things I didn't need, spending money I didn't have to impress people I didn't even like, you know, because you're worried about what people think about you and all that sort of stuff. That same kind of crap that goes on deep inside of me, which has nothing to do with drinking, but has a lot to do with alcoholism. That's the kind of stuff will stop me from linking up with the people that'll help me. Worrying about what some bozo might think about me somewhere. But so whatever it is, maybe at 15 years I had sort of recognized somehow a little bit. You know what I had recognized at 15 years, and this is true. I recognized that for the most part, not always, decisions based upon fear are not good. And I realized the only reason I was saying no, this guy was coming to my life, he was a good guy, I liked him, is the only reason I was saying no to this thing is because of fear. It's like when somebody says, "Chair the meeting," and you say, "Well, I'm not ready." Well, everybody knows I'm not ready is code for I'm scared. I'm scared, you know what I mean? Do this, I'm not ready, I'm scared, you know? So I went to the Bible study. And there's 40 guys who have been sitting around studying the Bible for maybe 30, 40, 50 years. Let me tell you something. I can't explain this, I think I said it once in this meeting. It is one thing to go to an AA meeting where there's 30, 40 people, somewhere between the sobriety ages of 0 and maybe 20 years, you know what I mean? With all sorts of attitudes, you know, some people love God, you know, two or three people love God, the rest of them hate him, some of them don't. And it's another thing when you walk into a meeting with 40 guys who are 60, 70, and 80 years old that have been studying the same stuff we're studying, same exact stuff we're studying, for 20, 30, and 40 years, and they're 60, 70, 80, and 90 years old, and they're all on the same page as far as the third step is concerned, and nobody's saying God is bullshit. It's a different, I can't explain it to you unless you've been through it, it's a different deal. There's no distractions, there's no focusing on the car or the girl or my job, there's no thumb-sucking crybaby, there's none of that stuff. It's all about him, his relationship in your life. Listen, we're on the 11th step, right? Improve our conscious contact with God, right? A relationship with God. How do I focus more on him? You walk into a group like that, and maybe there are other groups. You go to whatever group you want to go. You go and walk in God. The whole thing is about God, his word in your life, what he means to you, your relationship with you, and they're all focused like a laser beam on that. And there's no, you know, fat guy in the back row say, "I don't want to hear that crap." Now, they may have a million different opinions as to what it means and what God means in his life and everything, but as far as that, they're like focused on that deal. They're focused on, and I'll tell you, it's a powerful thing. And it was there I started reading the Bible for the first time and studying it for the first time. And it's there that I discovered after years of studying it something that I never knew and that people don't know in Alcoholics Anonymous, that the Bible was stolen from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's true. It's true. I'm going to prove it to you. This is the book of Psalms. So if you're Jewish, you don't have to worry about it. I'm reading from a Christian part. This is the Jewish part. You know what I mean? It's actually Jewish and Christian, I believe it. This is the book of Psalms. First Psalm, written by David. It was like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5,000 years ago. When the Chabad here? How many years ago was that? Like 5,000 years ago. First Psalm. Right off the bat. This is David. This is what he says. I'm going to read half of it, okay? Blessed is the man. Now, you remember the 11th step? So through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Right? See to that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to you and countless others. See to it, and great events will come to you and countless others. That's what we're studying in Alcoholics Anonymous. Where did that come from? Oh, Bill Wilson must have thought that up. Oh, that's a Bill Wilson idea, right? This is the book of Psalms, book one. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, and the guys who are out there ripping, robbing, and raping, or stand in the way of sinners, hanging out with guys that don't give a crap about their lives, or not practicing the principles, or sit in the seat of mockers, the seat of mockers. You know what a mocker is? I don't want to hear that crap. Laughing at people that are believing in God. Mockers. Do you think we have mockers in AA?
No.
Or sit in the seat of mockers. But his delight, blessed is man, but his delight, his life, his delight, his pleasure is in the law of the Lord, in the law of God, and on God's law he meditates day and night. Blessed is the man who focuses on God, his relationship with God, his law, you know, God's law and God's will in his life, and he meditates on that day and night. And this is what he says. He, that man, is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. Whatever he does prospers. Last paragraph of step 11. We know that God lovingly watches over us. We know that when we turn to him, all will be well with us here and hereafter. You know, it's hard to believe how King David could have stolen all that stuff from, really, Bill Wilson. But he did. We know he did. We know just by reading that stuff that he did that, right? So what happens? What happens when you build? You know, it is one. Let me tell you something, folks. Why do you think it is? Has anybody in here besides me noticed that the more meetings you go to, the better you feel? And the less meetings you go to, the worse you feel? Has anybody noticed that there is a correlation between seriously working this program and focusing on this program and focusing on things of this program and who you hang out with and how much time you spend hanging out with them? Has anybody seen the connection between drinking and not going to meetings? Am I the only one? I mean, up here in Broward County, they have people that sometimes say, I started drinking, and they say, how did that happen? Well, I stopped going to meetings. You ever hear that? Listen, there is an incredible Listen, I know we think our brains are powerful, and that once we learn something, it's locked in there, and we can never lose it, and that this is all done on brain power. But there is an incredible connection between where you're going to be mentally and spiritually and who you hang out with and how much time you spend with them. You understand what I'm saying? Now, if you want to be the best tennis player in the world, and you spend night and day with, I don't know, who's the best tennis player here now in the country, in the world? Anybody give me a name?
Rod Laver.
One of those guys. If you spend night and day playing tennis with one of those guys, you know, for 6 years, do you think you'll be a good tennis player? I think, oh. Now, if you play tennis with them once a month for 6 years, you think you'll be as good? No. If you never play tennis with them at all, no. Okay? Well, let me tell you something. If you go to one meeting a week or two meetings a week and they're not talking about God and they're not talking about this stuff, don't expect to have any type of spiritual relationship. Don't expect to be taken seriously as working this step. Now, you go to, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 meetings and you're hanging around with people that are talking about this stuff and seeking God's will, you don't expect to be taken a little more seriously because you're taking it more seriously. And you want to know something? You're going to be, and you know, when you go to a meeting like this, or any meeting, what happens? There's an after effect, right? You're listening as the meeting's going on, but even after you leave, you're thinking about the stuff you heard. And you want to know something? 3 hours later, before you go to sleep, you may think of something. You know there's an after effect of meetings. And so if you go to meetings routinely, you may find yourself always, at all times, sort of focusing on this stuff. You may find that not a minute goes by or an hour goes by where somehow your mind isn't brought back to something about God or something you heard in a meeting or stuff like that. Now imagine if you're going to all these meetings and maybe you're hanging out with a sponsor or other people that are talking about this stuff, and on top of that you're going to Bible study or you're reading the Bible. And do you think it has an effect on your life? Do you think it has an effect on your, you know, this concept? I mean, I'm not putting down prayer and meditation as we sort of talk about in AA. This concept that you're, and it's a good thing to say prayers and to meditate. This concept that you by yourself, if you just say the, one of the prayers I think they talk, what's the prayer they talk about in the 12 and 12?
St.
Francis prayer. Beautiful prayer. Wonderful prayer. Nothing against the prayer. This concept that you can avoid all that and grow spiritually, just say that prayer once a day. Well, it'll probably have its effect. If it has the real desired effect, you'll probably want to start seeking out fellowship with believers. This concept that you can do this program without fellowship, you know, just doesn't work for us. And so what I found, and I've got to report it, is what I found was when I started going, now tomorrow morning at 7:30, I will be where I'm always at Thursday at 7:30 in the morning. I'll be at a men's non-denominational Bible study in Miami. I know James has been there. There's a bunch of people here who have been there. You know, I'll be there hanging out with these guys. And so once or twice a week, I go to these Bible studies as an adjunct. Now, is this against Alcoholics Anonymous? I don't think so. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, it says right here, it says, though the family has no religious connections, they may wish to make contact with or take membership in a religious body. Alcoholics who have derided religious people will be helped by such contacts. Being possessed of a spiritual experience, the alcoholic will find he has much in common with these people, though he may differ with them on many matters. If he does not argue about religion, he will make new friends and is sure to find new avenues of usefulness and pleasure. He and his family will be a bright spot in such congregations. He may bring new hope and new courage to many a priest, minister, or rabbi who gives his all to minister to our troubled world. You know, I mean, that's right in there. That's right in our big book. Why should I be ashamed of doing what they're suggesting in the big book? Why shouldn't I say I'm just following what they're telling me to do? Instead of fighting this thing. And saying, well, that's not what I, you know, why should I be ashamed of doing what is suggested rather than doing it my way? Frank Sinatra, I did my way. My way almost killed me. And so are you shocked or surprised that, and that's where I met my current sponsor who's got 57 years sobriety now. I met him sitting next to me in a Bible study. Who'd have thought that you meet somebody with 57 years and when was the last time you sat in an AA meeting next to somebody who had 57 years? Who'd have thought I met him there? Now, what do you think happened to me as a result of hanging around with people like that over the last 15 years and going to as many AA meetings as I went to before? Well, this is the result of that. You're looking at the result of that. You think it's had an effect on my life and how I think about myself and how I think about others? Now, if somebody comes up to me and they want me to sponsor them, I'm just going to tell them what I do. If they say, I don't want to do that, you know what I say? I say, then don't do it. Then don't do it. But this is like baking a chocolate cake. You know, you got 20 ingredients to bake. You put this in, you put that in, you put the other thing. You want to start substituting things. You're going to get a cake, but it ain't going to be the kind of cake that I'm baking. It's going to be something different. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not going to lie to you. This is what I do. Does that mean you have to join my church and do my thing? No. But what I'm saying is, this is not as a result of just sitting in my living room reading the big book. It's not a result of just doing the 12 steps at meetings. My life is not a result of just, you know, sponsoring people, which I do. It's not a result of any one thing. It's a result of all this stuff together. And I'm telling you, a huge part of this has nothing to do with my brain, which, of course, I think is fantastic. A huge part of this has to do with hanging around these men that I met at that Bible study that quite frankly, honestly, I probably would never meet in Alcoholics Anonymous.
You know, it says we know but a little. And these were the kind of men that Bill Wilson hung out with. Ed Dowling was not an alcoholic. Sam Shoemaker was not an alcoholic. The people that they drew inspiration from, I hate to say this, were not alcoholics. I know you think, I know most people think, that all knowledge and wisdom and spirituality is found within the confines of an AA room. That's not true. That's not true. There's some stuff that goes on that isn't, that has just the opposite effect. You may have to actually go outside the box and look for that stuff in order to get the effect. And why wouldn't you? It says God will always disclose to you. And so that's what happened to me. And that's the result of my life is just following this thing to its natural conclusion. What do you think the natural conclusion of working a program of recovery, which has to do with improving, making a decision to turn your life over to God, getting away the records of the past and getting rid of everything that stands in your way of God, focusing on God, seeing to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass to you and countless others, abandoning yourself to God, what do you think the natural conclusion of an individual who does that over 20, 30 years would be? Do you think he'd be hanging around in titty bars or hanging around or digging in a Presbyterian church if you had your choice? What do you think which way that would lead you? Where do you think it would lead you? Hanging around with church people, hanging around in a synagogue? Where do you think the natural, where would you expect to see that person? Who would you expect him to associate with? What would you expect him to be talking about? What would you expect him to be focused on? I mean, use your brains. If your whole life is about abandoning yourself to God and seeking Him because He has all power and you believe in this stuff and you sincerely do it, sincerely means that you're going to see evidence of it in the person's life. Sincerely turning yourself over to God means you're going to see evidence of that in the person's life. Just going to AA meetings and saying, I'm hanging in there, I got 14 years, is evidence of an individual who doesn't want to drink, which is great. But let's say you have somebody that believes in this stuff, follows this book, sincerely turns his life over to God, you know, and sees to it that his relationship with Him is right, you know, and that's what he's focusing on, and he's abandoned himself. Where do you think that would find him after 10 years, after 15 years, after 20 years? Who do you think he'd be hanging out with?
Synagogue,
sure, fine. That's what James is doing. That's why we're meeting in the Chabad, which is different than when I met you how many years ago?
3.
When you were going to that meeting to try to get in that girl's pants?
That's true. That's how I met him.
It's a different deal.
By the way,
what are you doing? What are you doing here? I thought you were going to go to a Bible study or something.
I am.
Oh, okay.
I'm waiting for you.
What do you expect? Where would this thing take you? Where would this thing, you know, yeah, God forbid I should talk about this. And, you know, when I went to AA meetings, when I went to Step Series, I went looking for the solution, thirsty to hear somebody. I didn't want to hear the talking heads. I didn't want to hear the political bullshit of people getting up here, being scared of saying anything that they may offend anybody. I wanted to hear somebody tell me a message of great weight and depth that I can latch on to. And I think I'll try that. Why should I give you the pablum and the bullshit? You're all adults. Time is a-wasting. You know, you want something better, you want something more, you look at who you're hanging out with, and you look at what you're doing, and who you're hanging, and how much you're doing it. And if your whole life right now is just hanging around AA meetings and AA people, and that's it, and your AA little coffin, and, you know, it's sort of getting old for you, and it's getting a little tired for you, then ask yourself what you're scared of, and why aren't you doing what they're suggesting and encouraging in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? What are you scared of? You scared that somebody in AA will laugh at you, one of the mockers? You know, what do you care what they think about your life? It's your life. This ain't a dress rehearsal. Do your deal. You know? Hey, blame me. Blame him. You know? Don't say it's not your fault. It's Russell's fault. He warped you. Thank you.